Welcome to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. Each weekday here on GCN, I strive to expose the beguiling and the destructive myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism and the media, and with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, my mission is to help you understand what is occurring behind these headlines. Then, during our second hour, we will engage God on His terms, by way of His one and only covenant, and through His always dependable Torah teaching, so that with His guidance, you'll be able to replace your religion with reason and engage in a relationship with Him. Our phone number for those who would like to question or affirm anything that is said over the next 2 hours is 877-300-7645. This coming March 26th, which is, about 6 weeks away as we sit here today, will be Passover. The following day, on the 27th, beginning at sundown, will be Unleavened Bread. And then on the 28th, also beginning at sundown, we will commence a celebration of First Fruits. So here's a program insight. Over the next 3 weeks, that would be today, February 18th through March 8th, during our second hour, we're going to continue to examine the Torah's creation account. But then, over the following 3 weeks, that would be March 11th through March 29th, we will focus exclusively on what the Torah has to say about the first three invitations to meet with God. We will explain their purpose and what they mean to you. This is important because eternal life comes exclusively from observing Passover. There is no other door to life eternal. Redemption and thus salvation is afforded only to those who observe unleavened bread. An entry into God's home as one of His children comes exclusively to those who observe first fruits. So you should want to know everything that can be known about these things so that you can make an informed choice as to whether or not you want to answer the invitation that God is providing, ignore it, or reject it. Moving on to the news, several days last week, I told you that Ratzinger was resigning, that would be Pope Benedict, was resigning as a direct result of the exposure of the malfeasance of the Roman Catholic Church that took place 2 weeks ago as a result of the settlement regarding the child abuse cases in the Los Angeles Archdiocese, where the church was required to provide those children that it had victimized with $650 million. And in addition to that, the settlement required the Roman Catholic Church to make public all of the internal documents regarding priestly sexual abuse and the cover-up of these crimes, without redacting the names. The Roman Catholic Church fought the second part of that for years, but lost. And 2 or 3 weeks ago, they were required to divulge those internal documents which showed that they had taken an active, deliberate, purposeful hand in protecting the pedophile priests while leaving the children ever more vulnerable. That they would prefer to harm the child that had been abused sexually by these priests a second time by threatening them, by harassing them, than they would deal with the priest. And that they, without exception, never turned the perpetrator over in a timely fashion to the judicial system, to police, to investigators, to the criminal court systems, where they could be tried and held accountable for their crimes, and where the victims could be assured that the perpetrator would be locked up and would not be able to torment them any longer. Never once. And so what I told you was that disclosure of the internal documents of the Roman Catholic Church in the Los Angeles Diocese cost the Roman Catholic Church a bishop, a cardinal, and then a pope. and that the reason the Pope was resigning had nothing to do with his health. It's been declining for a very long time. And the reason he was the first pope to resign in 600 years is because of what those documents reveal. And then the next day we learned that Ratzinger was indeed going into hiding. In his own words, hiding from the world. He's going into hiding because he has something to hide. Over the weekend, the Los Angeles Times, continuing to plow through the mountain of paperwork implicating the Roman Catholic Church, found that Mahoney, who was revolting, I mean, there's no question that Cardinal Mahoney deliberately and purposefully aided and abetted pedophiles, and in so doing, increased the damage done to the children exponentially. But there's more to the story than that. From the Los Angeles Times, newly released documents trace the Cardinal's, this would be Cardinal Mahoney's, frustration with ongoing delays in his effort to get some accused abusers out of the priesthood. That's the headline. Now, mind you, this story will be about two or three of those cases when there were hundreds of abusing priests in the Los Angeles diocese. So we can't give Mahoney a lot of credit here. He only pursued the defrocking of two or three of hundreds of pedophile priests. And at no time did he do the right thing, which was to turn the pedophiles over to the justice system. At no time. In 1993, Cardinal Roger Mahoney wrote to the Vatican with an urgent problem. One of his priests in the Archdiocese of Los Angeles had been accused of plying teenage boys with alcohol and then molesting them, often during prayer. In less than 8 years, Father Kevin Barmase had, as one church official put it in a newly released file, left a wake of devastation that is hard to comprehend. Mahoney yanked Barmese out of his parish and waited to make sure he couldn't return. But Barmese appealed to the one body that could overrule Mahoney, the Vatican. And not just any office of the Vatican, my friends. He appealed to Cardinal Ratzinger. The case has been there. This is a quote now. The case has been there for many months. This is now Mahoney writing to the Vatican office, tasked with handling priestly misconduct. What is that Vatican office? It's the Congregation of Doctrine, which was the old Inquisition office, which Cardinal Ratzinger was at the helm of, headed for over two decades. The 2 decades before he became Pope, the very time that these letters were written, the person responsible was Ratzinger. And here is another letter. The case has been there for many, many months, Mahoney wrote to Ratzinger. The lengthy delay has created serious problems for my own credibility as a bishop. Of course, he was a cardinal, but that's the terminology they use. What was Mahoney concerned about his own credibility? He wanted to fire the guy, couldn't do it because Ratzinger wouldn't let him. Well, in the wake of court-ordered release of 12,000 pages of confidential archdiocese records from the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, Mahoney has been criticized for hiding abuse allegations from police and failing to protect parishioners from accused molesters. No, he hasn't been criticized for it. The LA Times itself has published scores of letters from Mahoney doing this very thing, coming up with a strategy that best hides priests that they knew were in fact abusing children from the judicial authorities. But these documents also suggest that Mahoney at times, and not very many times, but at times, had to press an unresponsive Vatican to get molesting priests out of the church. Now, before we go on, why was it that Mahoney didn't do the right thing, which is to simply turn the person who had been repeatedly accused by multiple victims of being a pedophile over to the police. Why didn't he simply do that? Let the American judicial system investigate as to whether or not a crime had been perpetrated. But Sandusky at Penn State, that's what they failed to do. They failed to turn him over to the police. When he was turned over to the police, we established a trial, the legal process, had the witnesses come forth, and a jury was able to determine whether or not he had, in fact, perpetrated these crimes against children. Mahoney didn't do that, did he? Why didn't he do it? Why hasn't any Roman Catholic Church done it anywhere in the world? And the answer is found in the document that I shared with you last week, that Ratzinger imposed an edict which says that the greatest crime was not that of committing acts of pedophilia as priests or even bestiality as priests, but was instead in letting those acts be known outside of the Roman Catholic Church, and that the ultimate secret had to be kept regarding these crimes, and that anyone that divulged anything that would implicate the Roman Catholic Church in these crimes would not only be excommunicated, that would mean that he would not only lose his treasured position as a cardinal, he would cease to be a Roman Catholic, he would be excommunicated, which from a Roman Catholic point of view means that they're damned to hell, but that he would suffer other indignities imposed by the Pope himself. And that was said of not only the priests who had to cover up these crimes, hide them, but also for those they victimized, was a second assault against them. That's why Mahoney didn't turn them over to the authorities, and that's why his only option, at least in his mind, obeying his church, was to seek solution within the church, hiding the documents from the judiciary. So when we return to Shattering Myths, we are going to consider some of the cases that came to light that fall right at Ratzinger's footsteps, implicating Ratzinger in the cover-up, which is why this Pope resigned. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. We'll be back in a moment. To Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. Our number, should you wish to engage in this discussion, is 877-300-7645. I'd love to have one of the supporters of Pope Benedict call in and try to uphold him in all of this. But let me tell you why I'm telling you this story, and then we'll continue with the story in a moment. I think there is no greater crime that can be perpetrated in our society than pedophilia. I think it is the single greatest crime that a human can perpetrate on another. An adult forcing a child to have sex with them. It is so devastating to the rest of their lives. And then when it's done by an authority figure, someone who claims to be holding the keys to heaven and whose response to the individual will either destine them to hell or a life in heaven. When that kind of a person in that kind of a position uses their position to perpetrate pedophilia, then the crime goes up a notch and it becomes even more devastating than it would be otherwise. There were 400,000 priests who had sufficient accusations against them that the hierarchy and their archdiocese recognized they had no choice but to send the accused pedophile priest's dossier to the Vatican. 400,000 in the last 20 years. 400,000 pedophile priests. Of those dossiers, they were all received by the same individual in the same office, that of the Ratzinger and his Congregation for Doctrine and of the Faith, which is the old Inquisition. It is the department in the Vatican that reports directly to the Pope himself. It would be the highest position one can have in the Vatican and not be Pope. They all came to Ratzinger. Ratzinger was head of this for 2 decades. He received 400,000 dossiers on pedophile popes. The only ones that he dealt with, he would only deal with on Fridays, and they were only from the United States. All of the rest of them he ignored. Tiny fraction of the 400,000 came from the United States. And of those that came from the United States, he only resolved 20% of them, which means that he resolved something in the range of 1% of them overall, of the 400,000. And his resolution was delayed a minimum of a decade on those. He didn't respond to anyone faster than a decade after the dossier had been presented to him proving that they were pedophiles. And none of them was held accountable by the judicial system. None of them was turned over to the judicial authorities in America for prosecution. Not one. Now, if you want to know why he only dealt with American cases, it's because America has a civil and criminal legal system that allows for punitive damages. That is, that if you can prove that the behavior of the offending organization that committed the crime covered up or aided and abetted the imposition of the crime, then to dissuade them from future crimes, they can the victims can impose punitive damages. And so in the United States, the Roman Catholic Church would be subject to claims in the hundreds of millions, if not billions, and that is precisely what happened. So that was the only country that he cared about because of his pocketbook. He only dealt with 20% of those reported in the United States, 1% overall, and not one of them in a shorter period of time than 10 years, and not one of them was turned over to the judiciary for prosecution. So, considering all of that, it would be hard for you to find a more evil man, a man who has perpetrated more harm on children around the world, who has enabled and embedded more horror in our world than the current Pope Benedict, a.k.a. Cardinal Ratzinger. He may well be the single most evil man alive today. And if you are a Roman Catholic, if you are one of those who is trying to make this man out to be a good and godly man, then you are an idiot. The story continues. Although local leaders had the authority to take troubled clerics out of parishes, only the Pope could remove them from the priesthood entirely, and the Pope would only act if Ratzinger's office told him to do so, something that Ratzinger seldom did. And when he did it, it was only after a decade after the abuse came to light. So when Mahoney turned to the Vatican, the papers show he ran into one delay after another. We'll continue with this story after the break. To Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yetta. This is the next line from the Los Angeles Times, which has done a thorough investigation of these documents. Speaking of Mahoney's experience, whereby he was consistently rebuffed by the Vatican when he tried to deal with priests who he knew were abusing children. It says this was not just Mahoney's experience. Anyone in the world who had dealing with the Vatican in the last 30 years was frustrated. Who's in charge? What's the procedure? How long it took? Said John Allen, correspondent for the National Catholic Reporter, who has written exclusively on the Vatican. That's only partially true, but that's what you would expect from a Roman Catholic. Everyone knew who was in charge. First of all, the Roman Catholic Church is set up as like a monarchy. The Pope is absolutely in charge, so this would have been John Paul II. But the person who was in charge of all grievances against priests, especially acts of pedophilia, which was ravaging the Roman Catholic Church at the time, it was exclusively Cardinal Ratzinger. Cardinal Ratzinger was the cardinal perfect of the Congregation of Doctrine of the Faith. Now, that was formerly known as the Holy Office. That, to give you some ideas to where it stands, it is the most important position a cardinal can have. The moment you have a higher position in the Roman Catholic Church, you become pope. So the cardinal perfect of the Congregation of Doctrine of the Faith, formerly known as the Holy Office, and during the second millennia, that would be from 1250 to 1750 CE, it was known as the Inquisition, the office of the Inquisition. And so every Roman Catholic priest, bishop, and cardinal knew exactly who was in charge as it relates to dealing with pedophile priests. It would be the cardinal perfect of the Congregation of Doctrine of the Faith, and that would then Cardinal Ratzinger, the current pope. They knew the procedure because they had to sign an oath of silence regarding the procedure. They all signed it. They knew what the procedure was. As for how long it took, they had experience. The fastest any case was resolved was a decade, and 99% of them were never processed. Mahoney dealt with multiple offices on multiple cases, including the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, the LA Times reports, the Vatican office that defends church teaching and publishes and punishes those who commit grave crimes, grave offenses. Well, there is only one church office that punishes those who commit grave offenses, and they have no punishment other than excommunication. So understand that not a single one of the priests that were ultimately excommunicated by Ratzinger were ever punished by the church. Joseph Ratzinger, the LA Times reports, led the office for more than two decades before becoming Pope Benedict the 16th in 2005. The pontiff recently announced that he will step down by month's end. Now, you think that the reporters for the Los Angeles Times, who up to this point have been judgmental, they aren't in this article, they were in every other article, they would just say flatly that these documents reveal that that Mahoney and others were, let me read what they would say, this, because it's entirely judgmental until you get to this point, and then they say nothing. They don't connect his resignation to these letters which prove that he was the accountable party and that he was the person protecting the pedophiles. Here, for example, 15 years before the clergy sex abuse scandal came to light in America, Archbishop Roger Mahoney and a top advisor, that would be Bishop Curry, plotted to conceal child molestation by priests from law enforcement, including keeping them out of California to avoid prosecution, according to internal Catholic Church records released on Monday. The Archdiocese's failure to purge pedophile clergy and reluctance to cooperate with law enforcement previously been known, but the new memos offer the strongest evidence yet of a concerted effort of the officials of the nation's largest Roman Catholic diocese to keep them from coming to the attention of police. In confidential letters, which the Archdiocese fought for years to keep secret, Monsignor Thomas J. Curry, then the Archdiocese chief advisor on sex abuse cases, proposed strategies to prevent police from investigating priests who had admitted to church officials that they had abused children. That's written in a judgmental tone. It should be. The evidence is undeniable. It is overwhelming. To their credit, Victoria Kim, Ashley Powers, and Harriet Ryan, the authors of that front page piece on the Los Angeles Times, this being dated Tuesday, January 22nd, wrote it in a judgmental tone, something you almost never see from journalists. And yet now, when the Pope himself is implicated, all they do is lay out the these facts. Mahoney dealt with the Congregation of Doctrine of Faith, the Vatican office, that, quote-unquote, punishes those who commit grave offenses. Ratzinger led the office for more than two decades before becoming pope. The office, the pontiff, recently announced that he will step down by month's end. How is it that you could not see a connection between those things? How is it that you couldn't at least ask the question, getting people to think about that juxtaposition of events? But they say nothing. They just simply go on. You know, if you don't exercise good judgment, facts are irrelevant. They have no value whatsoever. Knowing things does no good unless you can exercise good judgment and understand what is being conveyed. And that's the problem with political correctness that permeates, of course, our media, is that exercising judgment is considered a crime. And so no one thinks. But the moment you stop exercising judgment, you cease to be moral. You cease to be civil. You cease to be rational. You cease to be good. You cease to be productive. Everything becomes a mountain of manure when you cease to exercise good judgment. Why the world is in such a horrible position, why America is in such a horrible position, because political correctness is the moral code of the national religion of the media, the national religion of politics, the national religion of so many institutions in this country. Well, the article goes on. Mahoney appeared to feel particularly impeded in dealing with one priest, this Barmase. The priest who, now this is one of hundreds of priests in the Archdiocese of Los Angeles that was known to Mahoney of having not only committed abuses, but admitting them of young children. Now, Barmase was accused of abusing at least 8 teenage boys, but he was the only one who challenged Mahoney's decision to remove him from the ministry. He appealed. The appeal dragged on. What Barmase did is say, you don't have any authority to remove me. I'm a pedophile. I'm admitting that I'm a pedophile. But you can't remove me from my opportunity to abuse more children because the case has to be decided by Ratzinger, Cardinal Ratzinger, and the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. And he's going to do nothing. So there. So Mahoney should have just turned him over to the police. But had Mahoney done so, the office of the Congregation of Doctrine, Ratzinger, would have acted then. He would have excommunicated Mahoney. The appeal dragged on. Mahoney told a Vatican official with the Congregation for Doctrine of the Faith that he had planned to visit Rome in 1993. He suggested they meet in person. He would be staying, he wrote, at the Villa del Consilizione 36, which is very near Ratzinger's office. But even after his visit, the case remained unresolved. 4 months later, in March 1994, Mahoney wrote, by the way, Ratzinger's chief potentate at this point, the Cardinal Perfect. Mahoney wrote, given the pastoral situation in the United States today, which is all too well known, bishops need to be able to act quickly and decisively in cases of alleged clerical misconduct. In April, he wrote the Vatican again, same office. It is almost 5 months now since my meeting with you, and yet nothing further has come from you or your congregation. So this would be now 9 months after the dossier was turned over on this fellow who had admitted to abusing 8 teenage boys. Well, another decade would pass before the man who admitted his crime was defrocked. Troy Gray, 44, who said Barmase molested him in the late 80s while working in Tucson, cringed at the lengthy delay. Yeah, he was abused in Tucson. That's where they sent Barmase. And so rather than turning him over to the judicial authorities, he was sent over to Arizona, where he continued to abuse Tory Gray, was a victim of Mahoney's and Ratzinger's malfeasance. They have their own procedures and protocols, he said in an interview. It angers me that the children were put on the back burner. No, they weren't put on the back burner. The children were completely harassed by the Roman Catholic Church. They didn't ignore the children on the back burner. They went after them. They harassed them. They swore them to silence. They threatened them. Neither Mahoney nor Vatican officials responded to requests for comment from the Los Angeles Times. In a 2010 interview with an Italian newspaper that the Vatican posted on its website, a top official at the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith said the accusations that it moved glacially were unjustified. Unjustified. No, the fact that of the 400,000 cases, we only responded to 20% of those that came from the United States and didn't respond to any of them in less than a decade. Oh, no, it's unjustified. You ought not criticize us. Quote, this is not to give the American bishops a pass, but they really had no leadership in Rome, says Jason Berry, author of Render Unto Rome, The Secret Life of Money and the Roman Catholic Church. Oh, they had leadership. It's just that the leadership was rotten to the core. Ratzinger, first among them, maybe the single most evil man alive on this planet today. He is in hiding because he has something to hide. We aren't finished with this story. We'll return to it after the commercial break. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Shattering Myths. The story from the Los Angeles Times this weekend goes on to say that bishops started asking the Holy See in the 1980s for power to remove abusers from the priesthood. Now, they didn't ask them for the authority to turn the abusers over to judicial authorities. They knew they couldn't do that. That would have been the right thing to do for the victims and for the perpetrators. But all they wanted to do was remove them from the priesthood. But a formal request by American bishops was flatly turned down by the Vatican in 1993. Who turned it down? Ratzinger. At the Ratzinger-led Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, a staff of 45 was left, oh, this is their mea culpa, struggling to cope with the caseload generated by the world's 400,000 priests, wrote Timothy Radcliffe, a Dominican priest who worked at the Vatican as head of the order in 1992, from 1992 to 2001. He says, it is generally imagined the Vatican is a vast and efficient organization. No. No one in the right mind knows that. That's why the butler for the Pope is in prison, is because he demonstrated that the Vatican is nothing but a money laundering scheme. In fact, it is tiny. Oh, yeah, it's tiny, all right. Name another church organization that has such a massive complex. He wrote this in a 2010 column for the British Catholic Weekly. Documents slipped through the cracks. Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger lamented to me that the staff was simply too small for the job. Then why didn't Ratzinger turn over the accused priests to the judiciary in the countries in which they were living? The labyrinth protocol of the Vatican also made it ill-equipped to respond to the fast-evolving crisis. Well, of course, that's malarkey. One of the advantages of a dictatorial system, which the Roman Catholic Church is that you don't have to go through committees. One person, the head of an organization like Ratzinger, can make the call. The Pope can make the call. It is the easiest system to get resolution of problems. Oh, so it goes on and on. Now, this is kind of interesting, is that each time bishops opened a case about a problematic priest, they had to cut a check to the Holy See for $500, known as a taxa. And then letters were sent to the Vatican Embassy. Yeah, they made money on pedophilia. Here Berry is saying it's a system of tribunals and a monarchical system of government. It means that it's they haven't emerged from the rule of kings and of Caesars. The Vatican began revamping how it handled sex abuse cases in 2001 when Ratzinger centralized all of them into the Congregation of Doctrine of the Faith. The move has been hailed by observers of the Holy Sees as the first concrete efforts to address the abuse crisis. No. All he did, he didn't deal with them. He didn't prosecute them. He didn't hold them accountable. He didn't disclose their crimes to the judiciary to protect the children. No, he just made certain that they all came to one place so that he could cover them up. Until Ratzinger became Pope, he spent Friday mornings sifting through allegations of abuse from around the globe, reportedly called his Friday penance. Between 2001 and 2010, the office handled 3,000 cases, the vast majority from the U.S., Monsignor Charles Skyluna said, then the office's chief internal prosecutor. Only 20% of those cases ended with the cleric being dismissed from the priesthood. 80% were left unresolved. In one such case, the documents show Mahoney asked the Holy See for a favor just to get the person released. By 2004, when Father Carl Sutphin was 72 and living with his ailing mother, at least 16 people had accused him of molesting them in the decades before. Sometimes while hearing their confessions, Sutphin said Mass for his mother every day, which Mahoney called one of her few remaining consolations in this world. The cardinal asked if Sutphin could remain a priest so long as she was alive. Here's a man, 16 people, accused him of molesting them over the course of decades. Many of them were molested while this animal was hearing their confession, and Mahoney worked on behalf of the priest, telling Ratzinger, oh, leave him in office because he has a sick mommy. Well, if you are a Roman Catholic, you have a sick father. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths.
If you suffer seasonal or environmental allergies and your doctor has told you that the only answer is medications for the rest of your life, Dr. Peter.